gold has done stellar. And what's really interesting this year is that actually the dollar is strong, gold is strong, and you're seeing all-time highs. What I've seen in the fund business.
Frank Holmes, how are you?
Outstanding, Andy. Good to be with you.
It's good to finally meet you. Thank you for so much for coming up on board. I have some specific questions, but I first just want to start with, we're halfway done through the year, and the commodities have done pretty well, I guess, but where do you see the second half going?
No, I cover the commodity space, especially every month. I have a reset button on a global macro factor, and it's called PMI, Purchasing Manufacturers Index. I have found in regressional studies going back over 16 years, the correlation of various commodities with the PMI. So when the Global Purchase Manufacturers Index, the last month is above the last 3 months, that average, like a moving average, you get commodity prices picking up. When it's above 50, then they really start to pick up. And the correlations to oil, to copper, they're all different, but they're pretty robust, Andy. Like I'm talking about, if PMI is above 50 and it's done it for 3 months in a row, it's like an 87% probability copper is going to be up, et cetera. So they are above 50. They fell below. They came back up above. Germany has seen a bottom last year in the late summer. China seems to have bottomed and is above 50. But no one likes to believe China's numbers, but they are the 800-pound gorilla of demand. Their PMI, the Chinese PMI, actually has the strongest correlation to oil prices. So you can see outside of disruption with war, the correlation is once again in the 80s. So it's something that I look at. I remain pretty positive because a couple of things are happening. 70% of the world is going to the election cycle this year. India, which is 20% of the world's population, has gone through an election. You have America, which is the biggest economic power with 25% of the world's economy. It's going to the election polls in November. So it's adding it up. When 70% means 5 billion people are going to the polls in an election year, that means odds favor for rates to fall. That means the governments are going to make all these magnificent promises. And all those promises mean, let me print the money and we'll worry about the consequences later. And that has really helped, Bitcoin, that's been a big factor for the young investors. But for the gold investors, gold has done stellar. And what's really interesting this year is that actually the dollar is strong, gold is strong, and you're seeing all-time highs. What I've seen in the fund business are Americans as a whole do not want to speculate anymore in Eastern Europe because Russia's a problem. Twice, first Crimea, now Ukraine. So there's no more, I don't care what the growth is, I'd rather speculate at home. And then you're seeing the big money flows that are going into Asia and China. We don't want to do that. We'd rather be at home. So I think that you're seeing elevated performance numbers for the stock market. Everyone talks about it's too high. But on a free cash flow basis, it's not. And almost 50% of the gold producers, the 85 they follow, have a free cash flow yield. So they have lots of potential for the upside because the non-gold investor looks for free cash flow. If free cash flow is rising, expanding, then you see the quants go into those stocks in any industry or category.
So I'm going to throw my notes out the window because you just had so much information that I want to dive into, if you would. So you talked about PMI, and I find it fascinating because you're the only guest that I've ever talked to discuss is PMI, and I think there is something there. My question to you, and you might have already answered it, you said it's an average because I looked up the PMI charts in preparation to talking to you. They've come down significantly, but they haven't hit any new time. They haven't had any lows or anything like that. But my question is Do we see that reinflating here in the next couple of weeks? Really, it's going to have to. And then also tie that with the election cycle, which you already talked about. I would absolutely agree with you. I just had a guest on.
Yeah, we're so consumed with American politics if we get the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And in the laws of physics, force equals the mass accelerating, MA. Force is so easy to see when you say, okay, what's America? Well, it's 25% of the world's GDP. When that accelerates, it's a force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It has the most advanced military. When it accelerates, it's a force. So now we're going to look at India. Well, it's 20% of the world's population. They all start eating something or buying something. That's a force.
Right.
You saw that China is 20% of the world's population. And when they start infrastructure spending, that's a force.
Right.
So it's trying to take complexity and simplify it. And I can share with your listeners that when we look at government policies as a precursor to change, it's a binary model, like zeros and ones make up the internet. It's monetary or fiscal. It's Democrats or Republicans. I say don't get consumed with Democrats or Republicans. Look at their policies. So what are their policies? Well, they're not that complex in respect that it's either monetary or fiscal. Okay, what's monetary? Real interest rates, money supply. Okay,
right.
It's fiscal. Oh, it's taxes and regulation and spending. You know what's happening in the world? There's climate change fears. Guess what? All this rebooting and tax and regulations are drag, but the governments are printing so much money for climate change fears that it puts a big demand on copper. It puts a big demand on solar for solar panels. And it's recognizing that. Other big spend globally out of fear is war. War is a great concern. We saw globally electricity prices go up between 25 and 35% after Russia invaded Ukraine. Some places even more. Texas has nothing to do with Russia, nothing. But all of a sudden, energy prices went up here by a penny. So you say, what are people doing then? The spending on safety. We look at in America that where the Democrats and Republicans agree is rebooting all of the military with the latest technology. Guess what they use for the latest technology? NVIDIA chips. NVIDIA, has NVIDIA been a big performer?
Yeah.
This is not rocket scientist force equals MA. NVIDIA is now the mass. And spending is going into security spending. When all the Syrians were escaping and running to Turkey to go to Greece, Greece never spent much on security. Now they spend more than 3% of their GDP on security. Poland, way above Germany, they had to build a wall to protect themselves from neighboring countries, especially after Putin turned around and put 10,000 bicycles he got from China for people from the Middle East to go into Finland because they're a part of NATO. So what do you think Finland's going to do? They're going to spend more money.
Right.
So the huge spend today for climate change concerns and a huge global spend for war concern and their defense. So what do they need? They need copper. They need silver. Over here, they need GPU chips. They need the latest of engineering technology. And then they need the best cybersecurity engineers to protect. So you can see what does it cost now for a cybersecurity engineer? How fast has it grown from a civil engineer doing roads in America?
Right.
They're worth much more. So I try to look at the world starting very macro. What is the G7 doing? Then the G20. Then you got the world. And then you can see, is there big imbalances between their monetary and fiscal policies? And the bigger the imbalance, gold does exceptionally well. Well, there's big imbalances. And gold is making all-time highs in Japanese yen. Japan is rebooting all their military to deal with China and the concerns of China. So you start putting this stuff together and you can see another reason that's not really public why NVIDIA has been on a tear.
Right. So interesting, let's go to the war angle. What's really surprised me is that oil's not significantly higher with all the trouble that's going on, not only in the Middle East, but also Russia, and also with, rattling with China. Why isn't oil significantly higher, in your opinion?
I think it's twofold. I think that Russia's cut deals underneath the market price to countries like India and Pakistan. I think that American ingenuity with fracking, the real big dislocation, if you want to take a look at fracking, say for domestic, is LNG. Why is Latin, like, it's so low compared to oil. Oil's actually done quite reasonable as a global engine. But I think that America is really shown its clout again by reinvesting in technology to drive an industry.
Got it. So I really knew you were cutting your teeth. I shouldn't say cutting your teeth, but when I was cutting my teeth in my career, I stumbled upon you really, not only in the macro sense, but also taking it down to the micro. You do a lot of business and you're a big investor in junior stocks. My question is, both mining and I guess just resource stocks. My question is, they haven't moved significantly relative to the underlying asset. Why is that, in your opinion?
I think it has to do with a lot of regulations that are creating like they call blockage in your arteries for the economy. If you look at a 2008, 2009, there was all this credit crisis and there was a banking concern on what was the liquidity, that this was not a liquid bond. Well, they took that rules and applied it 2 years ago to stocks. So that has a big impact. You see all the prospectus that 15% of the portfolio, if it's micro cap or small, then the portfolio manager gets grilled by the trustees and everyone's afraid of the SEC. So they automatically kick it out, sell all the juniors. They don't own them. They don't want to own them. So you have a policy change that has unexpected consequences for liquidity, and it drives liquidity only into more liquid names. I don't think anyone thought about that collateral risk. And a lot of equity players that I talked to and lawyers, they just believe that it shouldn't have happened to micro-cap stocks in America. It's not just mining. It's impacted all the micro-caps. Micro-caps always underperform when the 5-year and 2-year government bond yields are below their 50-day. They rise, and when yields go above, they fall. So in the past 18 months, they've really 2 years have had a headwind from new regulations on small cap stocks deemed to be illiquid. And illiquid would be the spread between the bid and the ask. So the spread between a $50 stock is $50 and $50.10. So that's so such a small spread. But for a 20 cent stock with a 21 cent offer, well, that's a 10% spread. 5% to 10%, that's too great. So therefore it's deemed illiquid. It treats 1 million shares a day. It's not illiquid. But according to those models, is deemed. So you've seen a lot of selling by the small cap fund managers. And then in Canada, it's so anti-mining. There was a great visual that came out this week. They showed you that the Western provinces of Canada, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and British Columbia, get no federal money transfer payments. They all go to the East. But all the foreign currency coming into Canada comes from exporting commodities. But the government is anti-commodities. Well, what does that do? What do all those regulations do? When I first started the business in 78, it was 7 years from the date of discovery to you got the ounce of gold production. That was really fast. Today, it's 30.
Yeah.
All right, I'm 69. You come to me with a project and tell me I got to wait till I'm 99? I'm not an investor. So that scares away the speculation. In Canada, 5 banks operate oligarchs, and they control 80% of the asset flow. They say it's okay to go to the racetrack. It's okay to buy a lottery ticket, but you not to speculate in junior resource stocks. So you have this sort of layers of regulations that have maybe each of them have good intentions of what they're trying to do without thinking of the collateral risk they've done of clogging up the arteries of flow going into this exploration innovation. That's what I see. That what it means for the commodities is that any big pickup in demand, the supply is not there, you can get big price swings like copper. And copper can go much higher, and I think gold can go much higher.
Got it. So that leads me to three questions, really. Is number one is, do you see any change specifically in Canada to allow the mining sector, the energy, small cap energy sector to thrive like it once did? Well, let's just start with that. Go ahead.
No, it's controlled by banks. You can see that in America, too, the influence of the banks and what they do globally, the JP Morgans of the world. It's very much a very significant controlling of the capital of where things are flowing into. So you'd have to get a big policy change. They came with a policy in Canada that Pierre Lassonde and Frank Schuster tackled, that is that none of the pension fund money for Canadians is going back into the country. There's more money in private equity in China than there is in Canada's resources. But most of pensioners come from resources. So Australia came up with a rule, and based on my fiduciary, I have to go and get the highest return. I can't just do it unless you make it a law, unless you make it a boundary line. Like this is in hockey, they say this is the blue line. Then if you create a blue line, then that means that I would have to invest X number of those pension dollars back into the country. And so the Australian market has better resource valuation metrics now because that money's gone back into the country. That has not happened with Canada. You have Liberal and NDP. You have a prime minister that is very anti anything that's carbon and anything that is gold, et cetera. So you have a real great disconnect on policies to create exports pipelines. Canada could be creating so many jobs of finally building a pipeline from west to east to New Brunswick, rather than bringing oil up from Venezuela. It should be come across from Alberta. All that economic activity would be a big boom.
Got it. So I guess the next question is really leads to jurisdictions. Then if you are evaluating a company to invest in, what jurisdictions would be the most attractive to you that doesn't have this regulation?
Well, Latin America, a lot of places, it's faster regulation. So that timeline from discovery to production is shorter. Same thing in many of the African countries. But then you've got this other instability of political policies. We see that a very bright person becomes a leader of Mexico, but she's a climate change fanatic, not this doesn't balance. And she is a hardcore left-wing socialist. And immediately the currency falls. So Mr. Market out there, the invisible hand, as Adam Smith calls it, immediately showed up of being negative. So Mexico all of a sudden becomes a new challenge. I think that I was just commenting that to young research analysts we have, that like playing chess, it's not just what each of the players have a value, what they can do. It's where their position on the board. It's just as key. So you ask a good question, where are you positioned globally? One of the smartest guys in the space is Robert Friedland. And Robert's been buying a lot of copper porphyry deposits and assets. Prior to the past 2 years, he spent a lot of money in America because he believes that if you get a trade war, if you get something with China, then all of a sudden the copper in America will become more valuable, which is interesting as a jurisdiction. And when it becomes a war, then the EPA and everyone else, they change the tune immediately. All those regulations change because they have to get the metal. Hopefully they don't make a decision because of that. But I think that he's a thought leader. He's a strategist, that he was first to go to the Congo in a big way in copper, and then saw what the Chinese did, et cetera. We've made a lot of money owning his company, Ivanhoe Mines. And I think that you have to today look at the jurisdiction. But I was telling these young analysts, Andy, that a proven ounce of gold in Kazakhstan is not worth more than $2. If it's in Nevada, it's worth $80. Why is it worth 40 times more in Nevada than Kazakhstan? Because you'll never get it out of Kazakhstan, because Kazakhs will change the rules and steal your gold. And you spend all that money in a refinery, they'll find a way to bankrupt you because there's no respect for private property. What investors have to realize, the best countries in the world have common law. Human rights is the evolution of common law. It started in 1215 with the Magna Carta, the beginning of private property rights. And then America got so ticked off with the British, even though the king lost a lot of power, he had too much power. We had a revolution because they respect our private property rights and our human rights. So when you take away the priority property rights like they did in Venezuela or Cuba, they took away the human rights. So you're an investor. You have to take a look at that country and that rule of law. How good is that rule of law? And when I go into a lot of these other countries with investments, a dispute has to get settled in Texas.
Right.
Because anyone wants to steal the money, I'll sue them, and then they can never come back to America. I'll get judgment against them. It's that mindset because there's tremendous rule of law. The casinos in Nevada, they function because if you don't pay your debts, they hunt you down and they'll push the Crowbar Hotel very quickly. So gamblers will pay off the casinos before they pay off their credit card.
Yeah.
So that's rule of law.
Yeah. So on that note, and I think this is really my last question is, and this is a bigger one, is other than jurisdiction, when you're evaluating a company to invest in, what are, give me a three or four of the biggest criteria that you look at, like management, money in the bank, or the asset, or what's important to you other than the jurisdiction?
The jockey. The jockey is really important, and especially when you go to the juniors. We just gave a presentation in Quebec City, and Ralph was going through and he made it. And we have a couple of slides that we look at you, that we're not just making an investment in you, Andy. We're actually hiring you. So would I hire you? My money,
yes.
It's not just I get in, get out stock. No. Am I going to hire you? And so I go to your LinkedIn page, like I look at your resume, and I'm going to look at how many buy side analysts and how many often have you been interviewed by Andy Mellon? How often have you been on Kitco? How often have you done this? You get all that stuff on LinkedIn. And if that person does not have depth and breadth in buy side and sell side analysts and bankers and media writers that cover the space, then they will have less price discovery. Even if they have a gold discovery, no one cares, no one's good. But a person that has a big following has a gold discovery, those stocks outperform based on our regressional math.
Got it. All right. Well, Frank, I think we'll end on that. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on. And if people can want to follow you or get in touch with you and do business with you, how would they do that?
Oh, well, great. Thank you, my friend. And happy investing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll put everything in the show notes below.
Great. Cheers.